Welcome to What in God's Name. She is Shana Appel.
And he's Chris Owen.
Good to see you, Shana.
Nice to see you, Chris.
Except I can't see you. I've got my reading glasses on.
Oh, dear.
Let me lift up my reading glasses so you're not a blur.
Well, I can't tell that you can't see me, if that's any help.
You have tuned into What in God's Name, where we ask the essential question, what in God's name is going on in our world and culture?
It's a show in which we take a theological and philosophical look at current events.
We are welcoming new listeners week by week, and so we want to take a moment to reset the show. Our core values, be curious.
Go deep.
And shine light. And Shana, I just wanted to say a word about my motivation, what ignites me about doing this show with you. One is you.
Thanks, Chris.
I wanted to share the first time that I met Shana, she was speaking to a large audience in a church, and I thought, as I listened to Shana, that's a person I want to know. So that's how Shana and
That's so interesting, because the first time, I don't think it was the first time I met you, but the first time I really had a chance to get to know you was at an association meeting, and I saw your film on the Steamboat, and I just thought it was so brilliant on so many different levels, and I thought the same thing. This is a guy I really want to get to know. So I was totally blown away when you invited me to be a part of this, and it's just been a great, great journey through season one, and here we are at the beginning of season two, and thank you to everybody who's out there who's tuning in, and thank you to those who are sharing the podcast with your friends, picking a favorite episode or two and sharing it with people who might be interested. You are helping us grow our base, and for that we are very grateful.
We think What in God's Name is a unique contribution to the public conversation. We intend to get beyond or get deeper than partisan politics and use the ancient wisdoms of theology and philosophy to illuminate what is going on
in the world. To help make
sense
of what in God's name is going on in our world right now.
We aim to give a perspective that you can't get in other places, and that's our aim.
And part of how that happens, interestingly enough, is that, Chris, talking to you, I get to places that I wouldn't get to on my own. So it's, you know, the process unfolds, and hopefully it's fun for people to listen to.
One last thing I did want to say about this before we jump into today's show. I was reflecting on why someone would tune in, spend the time to listen to a show about gun violence. Like, wow, how much fun can that be? And so I think our show is demanding of our listeners. We are asking you to come into a space of thoughtfulness and reflection about things that might be difficult. And sometimes I think, well, maybe we should do a show on cats. But not really. Not really. That's not our gift and that's not our calling. I think I just want to say this in terms of appreciating our audience and appreciating that you are willing to spend 25 minutes with us in serious consideration. Last week, we talked about and shared with you the first part of a conversation we had at a church here in New Hampshire that has a project in response to the gun violence, the mass shootings that occurred this summer in El Paso and in Dayton. And I simply want to give you the background of that, because today we're going to hear part two of that conversation. The project was simple. After a process of discernment, the church decided that they would construct small crosses. When I say small, they're probably
8 inches?
Yeah, they're not even a foot tall. They would construct these crosses and then have a liturgy that involved physically pounding these crosses into the front lawn of the church. And each cross represents one person who has died in mass shootings in the United States in 2019, Shana. And that, at the time that they did that, was over 250.
Oh, yeah, just under 300, I believe.
And I think and then the numbers even have increased since then. So that
between the time they started the project and installed it, the numbers had increased. Like many churches in New England, this church is housed right on Main Street. So as you drive through downtown Jaffrey, you pass the church on one side of the road and all the crosses are in the front lawn. So a very, very visible and very striking project.
We have pictures of the project on our Facebook page, at What in Gods, and also on our Instagram, again, at What in Gods. In today's show, we're going to hear from two of the people in the church who were involved in the project, Mona Brooks and Sarah Ellis. Shana, what did you want to say about Mona?
That Mona is a visual artist and a member of the congregation, and I don't want to give away anything more.
Tell us who you are and your relationship with this project.
Well, I'm Mona Brooks. I'm a visual artist. And along with my husband, we got to action that very day and went, picked up the lumber and made the arrangements to get it rolling. So the next day, I mapped out the size of the little crosses and made the cuts with a chop saw, and then sanded the cuts, and then countersunk the holes. So because I'm a visual artist, I was into the project. There was the tactile sensation of the wood and the paint and the screws and the drill press and all of that. So it wasn't until about 7 hours into the cuts and sanding that I realized, wait a second, I just got hit in the solar plexus, because what I was making were these tiny crosses, parts to tiny crosses that my community was going to pick up and put together and then install. And I had to stop, because they were small and they represented the children. I'm not talking about the children that are shorter than me. I'm talking about the children that we all are in our creation. So I'm an art instructor, and one of the things that I'm constantly saying to my students is, it's not about the product. It's about the process that you're in. And I call that process that you're in creating art, which comes from the heart, a state of grace. So bundling up those parts and putting them in cardboard boxes and driving them over here was an action that I could do. But the grief that is there goes on and on and on. So in terms of carrying it forward, I wanted to say two things about that. One is that I feel like we're all ambassadors for speaking up. And it's hard to speak up. And I wonder if it makes a difference. And I'm speaking my heart right now. I wonder if I make a difference. And I feel discouraged a lot. But I have a gallery in the next town over. And at that time, I set out a table, and it's called the Blank Space. And the Blank Space is a place where people who come into the gallery can unburden their hearts and minds, sit down, say what it is that they feel. Because I do believe that every person that's walking around has something that they're holding back or that they're holding on to, fear, grief, and that we need to be able to invite people to have a place and an audience to speak to what it is that they're really feeling. And so I wanted to answer the question of, I wonder if it makes a difference. You know, I watch people come in to the gallery, and they might glance at the table and see what others have written or drawn and not want to look at it and walk out the door. So I wonder about that.
It makes a difference.
You think so? Well, I hope so.
I know so.
Oh, good. I'm really grateful to that.
A couple other things you said just caught my attention so much. I was struck as you were describing the creative process of putting these crosses together, just how starkly in contrast that is to the destructive acts that led to. So there's this, and I don't know if it works this way, but I think I'd like to think that creative processes can unwind destruction. And there's a theology in that. I think of Jesus as, and God as, speaking the creative word that brings worlds into being. And there's a deep, deep power in the creative spirit that is grounded in God. And I think that's our story. It unwinds the destruction.
Well, I was also really struck when you were talking about the creative process and the cutting and the sanding and then packaging into cardboard boxes. You know, I was seeing this as because each one of those crosses represents a life. And the plunging in with the chop saw to make the cuts and shots fired and sanding and hands coming in to try to save those lives and bandaging and putting together, and ultimately the ones who couldn't be saved were put in boxes and laid to rest. That there's an intersection that's incredibly powerful. And Chris and I had done a show last spring about trauma, and it's a big part of the work I do out in the world with first responders. And oftentimes we talk about body memory. So, you know, that which we perceive with our senses are the things which will stick with us. So if we heard something at a particular scene or felt something or smelled something or tasted something, and I'm wondering for you, has there been a lasting impact of, you know, the weight of those boxes, the feel of the chop saw, the tactile nature of what you were involved in? I'm wondering how, if that has been lasted beyond the project itself. And in other words, that's a very long way of asking, how you doing?
Awareness is. And it's not something that's a project and then you're over with the project.
Installation one and done, not so much.
No. Yeah. So how do you keep it rolling is the big issue. And so I'm definitely going to keep it going in my gallery in Peterborough. My big question is, I wonder how to communicate to children verbally and experientially about what actually does happen and within the human being that can create destruction and can heal. But the destruction stays with me on a visceral level. I think we're all suffering in the world, and that kind of suffering has to be brought attention to. And this is really an amazing installation. And yes, and thank you for bringing up the, just to reiterate, the symbolism. It's a human life, and it's the violence of the weaponry. I think we have a long way to go before we're developed enough to understand that we're in the process of creation and destruction.
Thank you so much. What struck me in what Mona had to say is her question, this searching question, which I think many of us ask, I wonder if I make a difference.
Perhaps that is the question which gives rise to all religion. Do I make a difference? Why am I here? What is my purpose? Particularly when we come up against issues like, you know, mass violence and the mass shooting, and we come up hard against our what feels like powerlessness.
Thank you for framing that theologically. That wasn't where I was going.
Oh, where were you going?
Nowhere.
Well, that's helpful.
So you helped me get somewhere.
Yeah.
No, I think you're exactly right. You're exactly right.
Do I make a difference? Does it make a difference? And I think about frequently the time that Jesus's ministry was carried out in, and what it might have felt like to be a people living in that time, a people who had you know, at one time in their glory, seeing themselves as the chosen people of God, who had been driven out, you know, multiple times, had their temple destroyed multiple times, were now back and under occupation yet again, and a brutal occupation at that, and how hopeless. I've been very present to that in these times for just lots and lots and lots of reasons. I'm also aware, because I have the good fortune, the honor, and the privilege of serving a congregation in West Brattleboro, Vermont, that my people are feeling that. You know, the people in my congregation are feeling bereft of those anchors, those things that ground us and give us a sense of meaning and being, that sense of belonging and mattering. And that was one of the things that Mona said that I actually wrote down too, because I was so taken. I was so taken by it.
Well,
so
that's interesting, and we want our audience to know that we weren't looking at each other's notes.
No, we weren't.
What's your takeaway from what Mona said?
Probably because of, you know, the work I've done in a previous life as a firefighter, paramedic, as a respiratory therapist, as someone who literally laid hands on the traumatized. I was really captivated by Mona's relationship to the physical process of creating the crosses. And I talk about that some in the interview, that tactile engagement with the process and the impact that that had on her. We as a nation of people are largely so removed from death.
We are relatedly disembodied.
Disembodied, yeah, yeah. So, yes, exactly. So that tactile engagement, that ritual, right?
It's a ritual.
It's a ritual. That artistic practice, which became a ritual. And ritual can take something that exists in a spiritual realm, make it present in a physical realm, and transform it. Does it matter? Do I matter? Well, I don't know. But friends, we better figure out how to do something, because it is in the doing that we find that we get ourselves regrounded, and that, you know, that art from the heart then becomes a state of grace. Yes, we will grieve, but we will not grieve as people who have no hope, because we are actually engaged in turning something around.
Let's take a listen to Sarah Ellis.
Oh, let's.
And again, we'll have some reflections after we hear Sarah. So go ahead and say your name and let us know a little bit about your perspective on the story of the creation of this, what I'm calling a Christian witness to gun violence in our society.
Right. My name is Sarah Ellis, and I'm part of this church. And I have to say that I resonate with optimism. To be drawn into the conversation, I was drawn in with the collective frustration. But as the emails went back and forth, one of the ministers whose sermon had been shared ended on a very positive note, not of, well, what can we can do, but more of, we can do something. And it was really the tipping point for me. It was the first time I had heard somebody of some stature admit that they felt that this could be licked. And that really resonated with me. And I began to think historically about situations that we have felt helpless in. And one of them that comes to mind that has different aspects of destruction in it was when women wanted to get the vote. And what an impossible task that was. And how much energy was put into that, and how many people joined in that and perished, passed away before they saw it come to fruition. But that situation has been resolved for us. There are bigger ones, stickier ones, like civil rights, that we still work on, but we have made inroads. And it made me realize that these movements begin with small voices and people who really believe that they can make a difference, and they gather momentum. And that's one of the things that we said in our meeting, that we didn't want this frustration and this meeting and this installation to be it, to allow the next crisis in the news to then capture our imagination and our attention, that we wanted to continue talking. I feel my strength through the optimism of believing that we can get enough force to turn this around. The other part of the way I look at it is when we talk about fear, how many people in our country who are various shades of color have lived with this fear all of their lives, knowing that to walk outside of their door might be potentially to be shot. And here we are, the relatively privileged who get to go to nightclubs and go to movies, and we don't even know who the enemy is. And all of a sudden, we are realizing that we could be shot at any moment for nothing more than being alive, like these other people have lived with all of their lives. They have had to live with what we're just getting used to, and we're so unused to it, and we think that for some reason we should be immune to it. But we're not.
Some have called the fragility of white privilege.
Exactly.
And I think it's also stunning to note how often the shooters look like us.
Yes.
Those of us who are, occur as white-skinned.
Exactly.
Anyway, which is another piece of that. So that's very powerful. Well, you're right. You had nothing new to add. So I guess we'll just cut this segment right out.
Well, just one more thing, and that is the bigger picture, and we've all hit on it, and it has to do with fear. It has to do with how many times has this situation shown up? To me, it's like one more facet of the diamond revealing itself in the fear of being shot, but actually, to me, it represents our misunderstanding of making a way in the world in which we would all get together and all work together and all love. How many times are we going to be challenged with a situation that destroys us and we don't step up? And as you said, Mona, face it. Go face to face with this fear. And begin to understand why it continues to bubble up in our lives and why we continue to allow it to dictate, control, influence the way we think and move in the world and don't love each other.
It does remind me, I think every faith tradition has it in there somewhere. For Christians, I think it's definitely the life and ministry of Jesus. In Judaism, that we are compelled to leave the world better than we found it. And I'm sure it exists in other traditions as well, but that thing that comes along and says, get on your bike and ride.
Right.
Get on your bike and ride. For you, it was, you know, one minister saying that this can be fixed. This can absolutely be fixed. And the minute that we think it can't, we will literally speak that truth into being. That we have to speak reality into being. I mean, all reality begins, everything begins with a conversation. So that the beginning of that conversation is a very powerful one. And because it is so powerful, I'm wondering how you would finish the I wonder question.
I've been thinking about that as other people have been talking, of course. And as you ask me now, I think of the examples of fear and hate, the Holocaust, the ethnic cleansing. Why don't people stand up? Why don't they say something? So I wonder why courage is so elusive.
It's interesting when you, when you say that, my first thought is because it gets you nailed to a cross. I mean, that, courage, that courage is elusive and largely because it is not without consequence.
So what?
Yeah. Yeah, well, getting there, getting to the so what place, that's the big move, right?
Right.
This is all bigger than me, so what?
Or, so we have consequences, so what? Things are not going to change without consequences.
Well, there will be consequences to no change as well.
Right, yeah. Exactly, right.
Sarah, I just wanted to respond to one piece of what you said way back at the beginning when you talked about other social issues that our culture has faced, and you referenced suffrage for women. And what that triggers in my mind is not just that issue, but then your characterization, your accurate characterization of how long that took, and that there were people who were fighting for that who died before the result came. And that, I think, is so. Again, I'm not sure there's a question in here, but just sharing with you my mind on this, my reflections. I think that is a gift of faith communities to the culture, which is a longer view. We tend to be, as our culture now tends to be, so just our focus dissipates, and we have a very hard time of sustaining attention. Somebody else talked about attentiveness over time. I think this is a gift of a religious grounding. It doesn't have to be just Christian. There's a bigger time span because we trust that there is a creator who is in history, and it's bigger than our individual lives. So that's simply a reflection on the time span.
And Mark did bring that up in the example of, it took so long to put those crosses in. But so long to us was, what, an hour and a half? And yet it took enough time to become really contemplative about it.
Also, in my mind's eye, I imagine the sound of the hammers tapping in the crosses while the spoken liturgy, the prayer, was taking place. That had to have been incredibly powerful.
Anything else, Sarah, you'd like
to
end?
That's
beautiful.
It.
Just beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
So, Chris, I'm curious what stood out for you in Sarah's reflection.
I loved how she, this is my word, not hers, witnessed to love.
Mm.
It's easy for us to forget our loves, and our culture, I think, is very cynical about this word love. You know, it can get trivialized into the kumbaya, can't we all get along, Rodney King
saccharine-y
kind of thing.
Yeah.
This is very saccharine. And part of the religious witness is to say love is a power.
Love like agape.
Yes.
Love.
Yes.
That mighty love, that love that has strength and wisdom and cannot be moved.
And without it, we will perish.
Absolutely.
You know, as I think about that, Shana, that's one of the things I think that our show points to. If we look to politics for answers, and we need, don't get me wrong, we need a good politics, we need a healthy way to govern ourselves, but without reference to some higher goods or to a God, but at least without some reference to a higher good like love, higher principles that bind us, the people will perish.
Absolutely.
Thank you all for listening to today's show. We're so grateful that you could join us. Again, we invite you to share your favorite shows. Maybe today's was your favorite show. Please do share with other folks as we continue to grow our audience.
He's Chris Owen.
And she is Shana Appel.
And you've been listening to What in God's Name.
Our website, whatingods.com, WHATINGODS. You can find our shows on our website. They also get posted to Facebook. Did I say that right?
Facebook, at What in Gods.
Is that thing called Facebook?
Facebook.
Well, that's what it's called. Shana, great to see you.
Good to see you, Chris.